Welcome to DC On Screen, a podcast about the upcoming DC properties being brought to film and television. I'm your host, David C. Robertson, and this is my co-host, Jason.
Hello.
All right, guys. Today we are going to get into a whole bunch of, if not all of, the DC movies.
I have to doubt all of.
Everything that we could find about it anyway. All of the DC movies that were never made. These were DC movies that were in development or being pitched. And we thought it'd be fun to talk about that. This will be two episodes. But first, we're going to jump into some news, including some SDCC news, which is actually the Batman vs. Superman panel is happening right now. On Monday, we will come back and record and a small episode about everything that dropped during the SDCC event, San Diego Comic-Con, for those of you who don't know. But we're going to jump into some news right now. First off, for San Diego Comic-Con, they released a trailer for Arrow, The Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow. It is online. It's not, there's nothing really new there. It's sort of just an amp-up trailer with bits and pieces from different comic book characters thrown into live action.
Just a sizzle reel.
Just kind of a sizzle reel, like a motion comic sizzle reel.
Yeah, I mean, we'll wait for real news on them. We have some of that for Arrow, right?
Yes, we do have some real news for Arrow. Neil McDonough is apparently going to be gaining a new alliterative name. He's going from Dum Dum Dugan over in the Marvel Cinematic Universe to Damian Dark in Arrow Season 4. I'm really excited about that. I like that actor.
I like the guy. If no one recognizes him by his actual name, you'll know him when you see him as, oh, that guy. You'll remember. You'll remember him. I think he's doing Justified now. I think that was what.
Yeah, he's doing Justified now. Yeah. You're gonna look at the guy, and for no other reason, you're gonna go, "Oh yeah, he was a dick to Tom Cruise in Minority Report."
Right. I remember him. He's a jerk. Yeah. You'll be fine. And you know, maybe he can cast some light on who the hell this Damian Dark is. Anyway, it's an elusive title to have. So
apparently,
do whatever you want with it, guys. I don't care.
Me either.
Just make it fun.
Jay Garrick has been confirmed for Flash Season 2.
Yes. That is exciting.
It is.
Old or young, do we know?
We don't know.
Okay. I'll take either.
Yeah, so will I. The new Flash costume is on display for San Diego Comic-Con. There are pictures of it online. I highly suggest you go check that out. We will be putting that in the show notes.
There's still an instinct I have when I see those costumes in a like at a panel somewhere just filling up a case. It's the same instinct I had with the Wonder Woman outfit. Like, why isn't someone using that right now? What is it doing sitting here? Why did someone have the day off? And I realized this. I had to think about it, but no, it's the instinct is that some part of my little tiny head thinks that's a real person's costume and that they're not out fighting crime somewhere.
I know.
It really is a that instinct.
Well, they are. They're there. They're not using their costume, but they are at San Diego Comic-Con fighting the crime of bad marketing.
Right.
So
no, it's just my suspension of disbelief just is taking over for that minute. I don't know.
Well, this is fun. Do you remember Cameron Monaghan, the guy that played Jerome in Season 1 of Gotham?
Mm-hmm.
He Instagrammed a photo of him standing in one of the lineup. What do you call those things? Like the photo where the criminals take the pictures. What do you call those?
Oh, mugshots.
Mugshot. There you go. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, we're back.
me neurons weren't banging together.
neurons bang. Go.
He Instagrammed a photo of himself in white makeup with the lipstick.
Wow.
Just a tease, but he's standing. It's like a mugshot situation.
Was this a personal enterprise or was this on a set somewhere?
It looked like a set somewhere, man.
I mean,
especially
if I were him, I would probably just be putting on the white makeup and at home. I would be too excited to wait for actual set time.
Actually, I think we've both done that.
I don't recall it, but I would believe it.
Yeah, but they did. They released some pictures, and we know that he's back. They released pictures from Gotham.
He was already confirmed for Season 2. We knew he was going to be in there, and we know that Season 2 is going to focus a lot on him. So
Yeah, we got we've gotten some set pics of Jim Gordon running around all bloody with a gun, and Barbara standing on a corner looking confused as always, and Cameron Monaghan in a prison jumpsuit. So I'm down. Let's do this.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, he's supposed to be all in prison right now anyway, so he's got to get out somewhere.
Sure,
I suppose.
Over to Supergirl.
The Joker's first prison break. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be adorable.
Over to Supergirl. Apparently, they are in talks with Laura Vandervoort, who played Supergirl on Smallville, and they're trying to work out some kind of cameo role. We don't have any real information on that, but I think it's interesting. Laura Vandervoort actually wants to be on Supergirl and wants to play some part. She'll be the second former Supergirl to show up on the show, because Helen Slater from the original Supergirl movie in 1984 is apparently going to show up at some point.
Right. If they do too much of that, it's going to be a problem for me. I'm already going to have enough trouble ignoring Dean Cain.
I never have trouble ignoring Dean Cain. I got
Bill,
some big news
Bill
for
Pullman
you,
of Superman. Who's that guy, right? No, that guy? Yeah.
I've got some really big news for you.
Okay, shoot.
They have confirmed at San Diego Comic-Con that there will be three animated movies coming out for 2016. One of them is Batman Bad Blood. One of them is Justice League versus Titans, which is thought to be a sequel to the Throne of Atlantis and War movies. And they're doing the Killing Joke.
Oh, that's gotta make you happy.
They're doing the Killing Joke, man.
That's gotta make you happy. I'm not necessarily disappointed with the other ones, but man. And there are a lot of times where these are fun little movies you could sit down with your kid and watch. You'd both probably enjoy it a little bit. I don't think that's going to be one of those.
Yeah, me
it's
either.
It's the freaking Killing Joke.
I mean, I'm excited because there's a possibility now. Mark Hamill said he would come out of retirement and play the Joker again if they ever did the Killing Joke.
Right. He was very specific about it, too, that he liked the retirement gig, but, man, what a role. Oh, and it would be fantastic. Now, I'd love to see, there's any number of things I'd look forward to with the Killing Joke. Like, that's as good as anything that's coming out already in 2016. But what are they going to do with that last panel? Does his neck crack or not?
I don't know, man. Hopefully they leave it as ambiguous as the comic does itself, you know?
I suppose you have to, but what I'll be listening for is, do they have the, do they have the sound?
No, they should just cut to, I mean, they might, I don't know, but I would honestly just love to hear like the Joker laughing. We see Batman kind of grab up at him, just like the comics. It fades down to the water hitting the ground, the rain hitting the ground, and we lose all soundtrack, all music, anything. Ah,
that's going to be awesome. And if they get, I don't know if they'll, well, hopefully they'll get Conroy. There's a lot of good options with Batman these days. But I will be looking forward to that little laugh they share. it's not often found that they share a laugh, and it's even stranger when it makes it to a recording of some kind. All right, I could drone on about how amazing that's going to be for a while, but it would all be just being me internally reviewing the pages of that book.
Right.
And daydreaming.
All right. Now, there are some websites out there who are live streaming the Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad event that's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually having trouble keeping up with it, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll come back for anything we don't have Monday.
Yeah. So at the San Diego Comic-Con right now, they have shown so far a bunch of footage from Suicide Squad. Deadshot firing his gun, Killer Croc strapped to a bed, Batman and Superman staring each other down from Batman v Superman. They've shown a Suicide logo, Suicide Squad logo, a Wonder Woman logo, Justice League 1 and 2 logos, the Flash logo, Aquaman logo, and a bunch of concept art, a Cyborg logo and concept art from that, and a Green Lantern Corps logo. Green Lantern Corps, I might stress.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh dear Lord, we.
So there will be Lantern Eye at this during these movies.
It does appear that there will be multiple Green Lanterns floating about. Apparently, there's some footage of Superman and Batman charging each other. David Ayers spouting platitudes. Apparently, he says it's all about the source material. Well, that's fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, okay.
That's a fine thing.
Again, yeah.
Oh, what, here, this is good versus evil shit, he says. This good versus evil shit is played out. Get ready for bad versus evil.
Okay. Okay.
Apparently, I'm gonna roll with that. There's a clip of Amanda Waller introducing the Suicide Squad. She says, "I put them in a hole and threw away the hole."
Wow. Waller's ideal form of punishment for most criminals would be to throw them into the sun.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm excited again.
They said they've got Harley Quinn in a weird cage prison doing acrobatics. Harley Quinn popping gum like nobody's business, they say. This is all over at Heroic Universe, by the way. We also get Captain Boomerang sounding all sorts of crazy. And we hear Jared Leto's Joker say about a fake Batman, "Oh, I'm not going to kill you. I'm just going to hurt you really, really bad."
Oh, I'm looking forward to that line. Now, and this is the part I'm most excited about. What is his voice going to be like?
Well, some possible audio leaked of the Joker's voice, and you can't make out anything that he's actually saying.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's what his voice sounds like, it is. It's a cross between Ledger and Hamill. But it's
that's
it
a
almost,
unicorn. If you could nail those two, you have a unicorn with a pot of gold tied to its horn.
I mean, just based on what I heard of it, if this is it, I mean, it's straying over into some of the John DiMaggio work from Under the Red Hood, but it's not like really any of them.
A nice hidden little pocket of a fine place to take inspiration if you're trying to Joker.
Just some of the tones, even at some
DiMaggio
point, sounded like
flawless.
Some of it just sounded like, to me anyway, like Ed Asner's Granny Goodness a little bit, which works better for the Joker, I think, but yeah.
Right. I would have taken that voice anywhere, on any other character, for anything. Granny Goodness is probably one of my least favorite characters. Not even just out of the New World stuff, just period. Period and plain.
So,
that some other day.
See, apparently in the Batman versus Superman stuff, there we get Superman being scolded by a U.S. Senator at Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Wayne running into a building and saving a little girl.
Of course.
Superman calls Batman a vigilante. Superman catching a space shuttle after it explodes. We hear the Lex Luthor "Devils Come from the Sky" speech again. Batman talks about Wonder Woman very suspiciously, saying she can wipe out the entire human race. Wonder Woman is then seen causing a big-ass explosion. Weird Batman hallucinations or flashbacks to his parents dying. Mm-hmm. Batman fights military soldiers.
Of course he does.
Lex Luthor has himself some kryptonite and is looking at it. Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman fight each other. All right. They say Wonder Woman was in the trailer a whole bunch, had two fighting scenes, clearly a film about superheroes coming to terms with the fact that there are others like them and trying to figure out what that means for innocent people.
Right.
Earlier this week...
It sounds like the first part of the film is going to be Batman getting his head around this shit.
Yeah. Earlier this week, Affleck said that Bruce, like one of the buildings that got destroyed in Man of Steel was a Wayne Industries building, and he knew people who died.
Oh, of course. Of course. And yes, good job, people.
Yeah.
That's going to be a nice twist. So he comes in already angry and looking to defend his flock.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's something for you.
Mm-hmm.
You said, I think it was last week, you said if you want to get the cheat sheet for what's coming up in Batman vs. Superman, go read The Dark Knight Returns or watch the movie. Mm-hmm. Snyder says this is not Miller's The Dark Knight Returns.
Mm.
He also says we put Metropolis and Gotham right next to each other.
Oh, really?
That's weird.
I mean, it's not like they're far. Batman has jet planes, and Superman can get there in like 2 seconds. So it's never been a distance problem. Most of the Justice League cities are irrelevant. I haven't thought about the geography too much.
No, this is fun.
And they're basically Jersey and New York anyway, so they're about a 45-minute commute with traffic.
This is fun. Apparently, Christian Bale advised Ben Affleck, make sure you can piss in that suit.
That is some real shit right there.
Yeah.
Two great hints from Bell's Batman. Hey, don't do the voice. Two, make sure you can piss, man. Okay.
Snyder says of Batman's, Dark Knight Returns mecha suit, it's not giving him extra strength, it's buying him time.
Well, the suit in The Dark Knight was essentially designed to do both. It was supposed to buy him time until he heard those faded words, hi-ho, goddamn silver.
Right. Oh, Ollie.
Oh, Ollie, you silly one-armed bastard.
Now, the panel has ended. It ended with them showing the trailer again. So, it looks like that's our... Until we get very detailed descriptions, or, please, Lord, a leak.
Yeah, I want leaks of one of these trailers. All of that.
That's all we'll have on the San Diego Comic-Con, and that's all for us on the news.
I did tell you about that 3-minute Fight Club thing, right?
You did tell me about the 3-minute Fight Club. I haven't gotten around to watching it, though, and I figured it was in April, so...
It's in April. We missed it entirely is what it amounted to, but it's just... It's every character from the Berlanti, Kreisberg universe cage fighting for fun. It's if they have anything even hinting at that tone for the shows that are coming up, this is going to be some of the best television you've watched in a while. It's a bunch of heroes and villains just fighting for fun and, like, yelling at each other, just, I don't know, rooting each other on and picking sides, and it's freaking great. It's...
I plan to watch it as soon as I can.
Yeah, it'll keep me engaged and interested till the actual season premieres, whenever it gets around to it, late September, October.
I couldn't watch it because I had show prep.
You know, things happen.
Yeah. We have to put on a show for all these fine people. All right, that's it for the news.
But we'll get into it.
That's it for the news this week. We will be coming back on Monday to kind of go over what all... I'm sure there's going to be some kind of leak or in-depth description.
Audio-video leakage that we can lap up.
But we're going to get into our movies. I believe we've got 23. We've got a list of 23 movies, and we're going to split them up over two separate podcasts because some of these get pretty in-depth.
Yeah, and I kind of lost track of the count after a while. There's so many of these things. They just, every time you blink, a Batman movie comes in and out of existence.
Yeah. All right. So these are some of the DC movies that have never been made. Now I wanna preface anything that comes after as this. A lot of this stuff is just ensconced in rumor. Mm-hmm. So not everything we say is going to be 100% accurate because I've done the research, and apparently no one is ever accurate. comment sections are full of people complaining that, like, oh, well, you said this or this, but this is different, and that's not true. And I'm like, yeah, but you read a different article that says a different thing. And I've heard some of the people, some of the producers involved with some of these things, and they all contradict each other. So keep in mind that certain things, you're never going to be happy with anything.
They're
so.
Not. trying to find a good common, a clear-cut thread of reality, trying to do any of that with any of these movies, no. You look up whether eggs are good for you on the internet, or whether you should freeze tomatoes, or it's the same kind of anarchy.
Right.
It'll never be solved.
Now, some of this doesn't actually even involve Warner Brothers, because some of this goes back a bit. This does actually have to do with Warner Brothers.
When did Warner Brothers get involved? What was that year?
Warner Brothers, I don't know the year, because it's not altogether, it didn't happen at once. Like Warner Brothers would have one property, and then they would grab up another property, and then at some point they wound up buying DC. So then, of course, they just, from then on, it was fine. But even I was reading, and it's not something I even listed on the rundown for the show, because there was just nothing about it. There was a Shazam movie that was in the works in the very early 2000s. They were talking about doing that. I should say for the first time, they were talking to The Rock about being Black Adam. And then they were going to do that, and Warner Brothers hurry up and grab that property up, and it was going to be done for New Line anyway, and then they wound up buying New Line. So, I mean, the world of movie production is always fluid.
Right.
All right, let's jump into the Ivan Reitman, Bill Murray movie, The Batman, 1983.
This is it. Losing this movie was either the greatest thing that has ever happened to mankind or the greatest tragedy of the 20th century.
Right. I mean, it was written.
It was either one of those and nothing in between.
It was written by Tom Mankiewicz. This is the guy that went and, I mean, this is the dude that wrote Superman 1 and 2, the Chris Reeve movies.
He has street cred.
He does have street cred.
Especially during that time.
There is a link to an article. It's not an article. It's a transcript of a Starlog magazine interview that Tom Mankiewicz did. And this is early on. He'd written the script. I've also got a link to that script that has been leaked online.
That'll be up on the page. Like, a bunch of these links are going to be there if anyone wants to check out our citations and whatnot.
Right. We've got a fair amount of
dutifully posted things for us.
There are a lot of scripts that are actually floating around online.
I mean, if you're just plain bored and actually remember how to read real sheets of paper,
Yeah.
Scripts are out there.
I mean, I might go back and read some of these things just to get a full view of what's happening.
There's a couple I'm going to dig into.
In the Starlog interview, Mankiewicz is saying that he would rather it be an unknown be cast as Batman. He wanted Peter O'Toole as the Penguin. He wanted, I just blanked completely.
And that's how forgettable that cast was.
Peter O'Toole, I've heard rumors, though, that Peter O'Toole was actually being considered for the Joker as well. Mm-hmm. And that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Bill Murray, Ivan Reitman directing, Bill Murray in a Batman movie.
Like, Ivan Reitman, Bill Murray, Batman. Fuck you, take my money.
Yeah, yeah.
We're done there. And
apparently they wanted David Niven as Alfred and William mm-hmm. Holden as Commissioner Gordon. And there was apparently some talks that David Bowie might play the Joker.
I would have given anything for pre-Labyrinth or even around Labyrinth era Bowie to do a take mm-hmm. on the Joker. That would have been phenomenal.
But in the Starlog interview, Mankiewicz said he wanted Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
It's not like that would hurt anyone's feelings, but damn.
Well, no. I mean, we've seen that and.
Yeah,
damn.
Basically everyone who's ever seen The Shining wanted him to be the Joker. I don't think the chronology of that seems pretty easy.
Not me, man. I wanted him to play Robin.
Right. I had Calendar Man picked out. Let's do it.
Speaking of Robin, apparently Eddie Murphy and Michael J. Fox were both being considered for the role of Robin.
And that is where this train starts to derail.
Eddie Murphy, yes. Michael J. Fox?
Okay, maybe Michael J. Fox. Maybe.
Wait, Bill Murray is Batman? Bill Murray is Batman and Michael J. Fox is Robin?
See,
you
I think
better
that's
believe
why the movie,
I'm there.
I know, I'm watching it. But I think that's why the movie never made it. They got tired of trying to figure out the tone. Because imagine you're telling a writer that, hey, we're going to write a serious Batman movie. Reitman's going to direct, and somebody's already going, okay, all right, Meatballs, Ghostbusters, cool. No, he's going to direct a serious movie. Oh, okay, we're doing a serious movie. Okay, well, who do you have for Batman? Bill Murray. Okay, who's Robin? Michael J. Fox. Oh, okay. No, we want you to write a serious movie now. And then someone goes home and tries as hard as they can to sit down and write a deliberate, dramatic movie starring Bill Murray, and they can't do it.
Well, Mankiewicz said in the interview, which, again, was very early in any of these talks.
How do you not put a joke in his mouth?
Mankiewicz, well, I mean, we're looking at Mankiewicz who wrote Superman. I mean, Otis Berg, the Gene Hackman, Midwestern huckster, Luther. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's room for jokes, but he was saying he wanted it to be very dark, and he wanted Batman to be very frightening. He even described... in the interview, he describes Batman's gaze as hypnotic, what's his name? Dude from Death Wish. He just wanted him to just be frightening, like you crap yourself just looking at him.
Now, that is how the bat is supposed to be designed. That's the whole point of Year One, right? Is mm-hmm. they're not afraid of me yet. And if anything is to be taken as source material, it's gonna be Year One.
Now,
right?
To be clear,
mm-hmm.
it's rumored that there were 9 separate rewrites by 9 different writers.
I believe that. We live in a world where the Flintstones, I believe, had 100 90 or 160 different rewrites.
Yeah.
Nine isn't even a very large number for rewrites or writers. Like three out of every four scripts apparently have to go into arbitration because no one can figure out who wrote it by the end of it.
Now we'll end out this one with a quote from Bill Murray. I would have been a fine Batman. You know, there have been a number of Batmen. I like them. I thought Mike Keaton did a great job as Batman. It's obviously a great role.
Yeah.
That was Bill Murray on being offered the part of Batman. He was actually also considered for the Tim Burton Batman movie before it went to Keaton. So,
I want to find audio of him saying that somewhere and just reparse all the words together so that he's saying I'm Batman, and I'll just play it on a loop, and that's as close as I'll ever get.
I just want a giant poster of Bill Murray that says I would have been a fine Batman.
Yeah,
The hubris on that cat.
Surely that's a T-shirt somewhere. Surely that's a T-shirt. If not, someone please make the T-shirt. We'll buy it.
I might, you know what? I think I might actually make that T-shirt. I might make all that right. T-shirt.
We're branching out into merchandising.
I'll put up notes in the show links. I'll put up links in the show notes of my I would have been a fine Batman Bill Murray T-shirt.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Bill Murray had the chops, too. Don't let him fool you. Don't let him fool you. He can do dark and scary when he feels like it. If he wasn't such a good vocal actor, if you just watch some of his films on mute, he can look scary.
He can.
He's downright scary in the speech in Stripes. If you watch that on mute and don't realize that he's being incredibly fucking funny, it looks like he's intimidated, that he's broken up a fight because he's the manliest man in the room and then intimidated everyone into obedience.
Yeah, by the end of it,
by the end of it, it looks like a Nazi training camp. And all it is him talking.
I am always on board a tried and true known comedian being given a very serious role. Because if they can nail comedy, they can nail anything.
And
comedy's hard.
It's harder. It's harder to go back. If you're already funny and I have to accept you as being serious, I'm not going to get a laugh out of you. That's harder to do than if you were already a dark guy. Well, a laugh is a knee-jerk reaction. It even helps if I can't see it coming.
Plus, generally, the kind of people who become comedians, I say this as a person who has a bunch of comedy videos online, and generally, you have lived a life of shielding yourself emotionally through laughter. Mm-hmm. Like, you have been pouring yourself into, make them laugh at you before, make them laugh with you before they laugh at you, and laugh at yourself before they can laugh at you, and let's find all the dark, terrible things that I hate about the world and make fun of them.
Right. This is the reason, is one of the reasons I've always loved the Joker as much, is he's a perfect example of,
I was just thinking, until just this moment, I didn't realize how close I was to being the Joker, but here we are.
All it takes is one bad day.
You wouldn't fit in his suit. It'd be like a Joker penguin kind of mishmash.
Well, I mean, I'm not like the penguin man. I mean, come on.
I don't know. I always think of the Joker as svelte. I don't.
Hey, the original Joker was a little tubby, and you look at Nicholson, man. I mean, he wasn't exactly svelte, as you put it.
No, he was not a warrior, that one.
Oh, he was a warrior. Now, Battle of the Bulge.
Should we find another movie?
Sure.
I was afraid of going into Bill Murray Batman because we could just do a show about how much I wanted that to happen.
Yeah, but that's what everybody cares about, right?
Bill Murray Batman. Come on.
Yeah, Bill Murray Batman. We'll take however much time we want.
Fuck the rest of this. Yeah. Put away all your notes. All right. We're just doing that for an hour.
All right. Now, of course, the Bill Murray Batman didn't happen. Instead, Tim Burton's Batman happened. Tim Burton's Batman Returns happened. And evidently, there was some talk, and this is heavily disputed.
Premise that as, instead of saying it every time, just know that it's heavily disputed.
Right,
We should just leave that out for the rest of the...
So, apparently, there was Tim Burton's Batman Forever, which they were talking to Robin Williams as the Riddler. Billy Dee Williams was going to be back as Two-Face. Rene Russo was cast as Dr. Chase Meridian instead of Nicole Kidman.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Michael Keaton was going to be Batman again. Now, there is a rumor that Marlon Wayans was going to be coming in as Robin.
And that's where I parachute off the plane.
We know he was cast as Robin in Batman Returns, but they wound up dropping Robin from the script. When Tim Burton left, Keaton followed.
What impish little man in Hollywood is running around whispering in someone's ear that Marlon Wayans should be Robin?
From everything I've seen of Marlon Wayans, the only thing you could really truly hope for is Robin running around trying to get Batman to smoke some weed with him.
That's what I'm saying. He peaked as a stoner in Scary Movie. Like, that's the role he was born for, and bless him, he achieved it. Now let's put it to bed.
And, you know, well, he had that movie, what was it, Senseless, where all of his senses got enhanced through some chemical, and he could just, all he did was just, for 2 hours, he just made like a stank face because he kept smelling things.
That sounds right.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, and in a turn of events that you'll start to see after a minute is, it happens a lot. Burton leaves, Keaton follows.
Well, it's really just that once. But
it's just that once, but it's usually director leaves, main cast follows, whole thing falls apart.
Yeah.
And it's often after the network has sent him back some weird notes. Like, I'm sure Burton was on board, and then he got a note from, again, some evil tiny man saying that Marlon Wayans should be Robin and thought, oh, well, fuck this.
You know who'd be a good Robin?
I'm
the
off
least
to shoot
talented
Johnny Depp
Wayans
20
brother.
Times. What?
The last, the least talented Wayans brother should be Robin. I'm certain of this. But I don't know, man. That has Tim Burton decision making all over it.
I don't know. I can get behind Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face. No, I'm
well,
down.
I mean, he was Harvey Dent. He was Harvey Dent in the original 89 Batman. That was the whole reason he signed on to be Harvey Dent, because he wanted to be Two-Face at one point.
That's why you do it, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure D'Agosto didn't care to just do a Harvey Dent that never turned into Two-Face. He's on that show right now because someone promised him that eventually he could get into makeup.
Yeah. And you know what they should do? They should do this because Schumacher came in, recast pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
There was never a script for Tim Burton's Batman. But you know what would be kind of cool if in Gotham they just like they did in the movies, they just all of a sudden Harvey Dent goes from being white little Nick D'Agosto and then becomes Billy Dee Williams. No explanation.
Why? That's right up there. That weird, tiny, evil man who keeps suggesting Marlon Wayans as Robin is standing behind you right now, isn't he?
It's retribution for the Two-Face we lost.
What spirit is it? Like, go find some sage and burn it in your home and get rid of this evil spirit.
All right, on to Tim Burton's Catwoman now.
Find
if you'll remember the...
virgin hair. Burn it. Okay.
Yeah. The final shot of Batman Returns was Catwoman... showing up, or like that was her last scene, therefore indicating that she was going to be back.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Burton wanted to do a spinoff movie. He wanted to do, from what I understand, he wanted to do a spinoff movie with Catwoman, who would once again be played by Michelle Pfeiffer.
Sure.
There was a script written by Daniel Waters, and it was turned in on apparently the day Batman Forever came out.
A day that will live in infamy.
And Batman Returns got a lot of flack from parents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have the Penguin making dick jokes, biting people's noses.
Mm-hmm.
Disturbing character.
Lean off.
So Warner Brothers kind of freaked out, and they were like, well, Batman Forever, we want it to be kid-friendly. We want it to be, you know, a movie that people won't have a problem taking their kids to.
Well, parents were legitimately confused because they were at McDonald's, and you get a Happy Meal with this little terrible penguin action figure, which reminds you, and unfortunately your child, that the Batman movie is going to come out, and you're like, okay, fine. I like Batman. We'll go watch that movie. And then you get in there, and you realize that you've scarred your child. They actually had kind of a point. My point isn't that you're not supposed to make Batman movies gritty. You obviously should. That goes without
saying. Sure.
My point is that you don't put them in fucking Happy Meals. These are not Happy Meal characters. They have shows for that.
You know, my personal viewpoint, my problem with Batman Returns was that it was boring. When I was a kid, I wasn't taken aback by Penguin making his dirty parasol jokes. I understood. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. I mean, Umbrella's a penis. Oh, okay, I understand.
I'll take the whole movie just for the one shot where Keaton looks over his shoulder and realizes that he almost got killed by a couple of penguins.
Yeah, that is a great shot.
I'll
it's always
the
one,
whole
been
movie
one of my
for that one
shots.
Shot. You could just you can hear the internal dialogue. Holy shit! Almost got taken down by a couple of damn penguins. I fight super
and yeah, I have to say that's always been one of my favorite shots in the entire movie. It always cracked me up. And
you forget that Keaton is in fact funny, and then you see that shot, and it's okay.
We've both listened to Fat Man on Batman, and they did a review of the Batman Returns movie, mm-hmm. and Kevin Smith cracks up over that one little scene, and it's so subtle, but it's hilarious. I was just so happy that Kevin Smith saw the same thing I did all those years, because everyone I'd ever watched the movie with, they were like, "What are you laughing at?" And I'm just like, "Because he almost got killed by the penguin."
You just started laughing and never fully articulated yourself.
Yeah, he totally had this like, "What the hell was that? What's
are you fucking serious? Throwing penguins at me? Damn it!"
A penguin just shot a literal penguin just shot a rocket at me.
I donate to like 20 environmentalist actions. Penguins are trying to kill me.
I just drove upside down in a tunnel.
All right, we should try to move.
So
on.
Obviously, what happened though with that was Batman Forever was a big hit. They wanted to go more family friendly. The road to Batman and Robin, unfortunately, was well into being paved, and mm-hmm. Catwoman wound up in development hell for a few years, and then wound up being rewritten a number of times, and
eventually dying as Halle Berry.
Yeah, but Ashley Judd was going to play her at one point.
I actually wouldn't have. It wasn't like Halle Berry playing her was a problem for me. That's fine. Just make a fucking decent movie.
No, you know what? Halle Berry is a terrible choice. And I say that because Halle Berry is a terrible actress. I don't care. I don't care that she has an award on her shelf. Everything
you know,
I've
she
seen
got
her
that off
and
the
she
off
has sucked. Yeah, I mean, I was forced to watch a couple of scenes of Gothica. Actually, mm-hmm. No, I did watch Gothica and I wanted to kill myself. The X-Men Storm is easily the worst part of those movies.
I actually agree. I don't know. She wasn't even the worst part of that film, I guess is my point.
Right.
I don't think she could have. I don't think she didn't have the chops to play Catwoman. It's not that intensely of a. It's not that intense of a character. It's not like they're just. She's really not that intense of a background. Like the biggest, the most complex story that she's got even is out of Long Halloween, where she's possibly one of the major mob boss's daughter. And then, then the list gets pretty short.
Well, I mean, she was a hooker. That's pretty. I mean, she was a street savvy hooker, man. I mean,
well, yeah.
That and that really does. That takes some acting chops to get right.
I don't know.
Actually play that well, but without a. Anyway.
We've lost more time on Catwoman than anyone has in years already.
No. So anyway, Batman and Robin came out. Huge critical failure, huge monetary failure. But Schumacher wanted to make it right again. And I should say that Schumacher did. He wanted, I mean, he was fully responsible for those damn bat nipples. And even he has said that he will be haunted until the end of his days with those bat nipples. He says it will probably even be on his gravestone.
I'll make
and
sure
he's
it's
not,
there.
He's not wrong. I will one day track down with Joel Schumacher's tombstone and draw bat nipples
right.
on it.
Right.
But
no,
to his credit.
In chalk. We're not vandalizing here. Rain will take
it away.
Oh,
I'm vandalizing. He vandalized my childhood. But to be fair,
so you're
going to Joel Schumacher,
vandalize his deathhood. Okay.
To be fair to Joel Schumacher, he did want Batman Forever to be a much darker movie, but.
Yeah, his vision when it started was actually the way to go, and it all fell apart.
Yeah, yeah. And by the time you get to Batman and Robin, they had. They like brought in and said, "Okay, well, here are the toys. Write a script."
Yeah,
and what do you do with that?
Used what looks like an algorithm to decide that Alicia Silverstone should be involved in any capacity.
Right.
That cannot be anything but an algorithm and a misplaced comma.
Oh, Clueless. We have to put okay. So talk about Clueless. Anyway.
Some producer's daughter really loved that movie, and he made her a birthday promise.
Yeah, I know.
That's my secret.
We'll get into Batman and Robin at a different time. Anyway,
well, my point
Schumacher...
is that in his version, Alicia Silverstone and Batgirl were not involved.
Mm-hmm.
Go Joel.
Yeah. From what I understand, that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Schumacher wanted to redeem himself in the eyes of the fans. He wanted to make, hoped that the failure of Batman and Robin would kind of bring Warner Brothers back over into the middle ground. And he pitched a thing called Batman Unchained, which has also been referred to as Batman Triumphant online. This would have involved George Clooney and Chris O'Donnell coming back. Scarecrow and Harley Quinn were going to be the villains.
Mm-hmm. There were talks with a Scarecrow that would have been at least slightly unique.
Yeah, this was a satanic Scarecrow, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was going to be, and Schumacher even remembers going to the set of Face Off. Y'all remember Face Off, right?
Yeah.
What a delightful romp. Actually going to the set to ask Nick Cage to play the Scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine he said no.
No, why would you? Well, Batman and Robin had just happened, so he'd probably be like,
Yeah, but he probably pitched it to him as like, man, you're the one who can save this. You can bring some legitimacy back to this movie. Like, fuck Travolta, he couldn't do it, but you could.
Yeah, you're Dr. probably right, Nick Cage. Nick Cage wouldn't have said no. I mean, he's got two Ghost Rider movies under his belt.
That's all I'm saying. The man tried to be Ghost Rider.
He's a comic book fan. He'll do anything they tell him to.
He really is. Also, he spends a lot of money. Now, they were going to have him do it, and he was going to have... this particular version of Crane was the same brilliant... psychologically based fearmonger, but
mm-hmm.
he was going to be a little satanic, and it was a personal vendetta against Bruce Wayne.
And Harley Quinn was going to be the Joker's daughter, like Jack Nicholson's Joker's daughter.
Now,
and
that's even
hated to be, Batman.
You're not even suggesting, intimating that it would be. No, specifically his daughter. He was going to tie him together.
Yeah. She was going to be like a toy maker. And she hates Batman because he killed the Joker in the first Batman movie, and it would have they would have teamed up, and Crane figures out who Batman is, and they try to drive him insane. They try to drive Batman insane, and they have him sent to Arkham Asylum.
Right.
And apparently, it all like culminated with this big sequence where Batman would have to face off against all of the previous villains of the franchise. They wanted to get Danny DeVito back, Michelle Pfeiffer, Tommy Lee Jones, Jim Carrey, and then Jack Nicholson himself.
It actually, at that point, and this is, I've always wanted to see this done in some capacity, but at that point it actually starts to sound like Grant Morrison's Arkham Asylum.
A little bit, yeah.
It starts to sound like just a mind trip through the abandoned portions of Arkham that only certain people have ever seen.
No,
it's a good way to get the Joker back in general.
Mm-hmm.
You still want death to count. Come on now.
Yeah, you want death to count, but you know, I was excited about this pitch. I remember these rumors coming out in like 98, man. I mean, I remember this.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the movie would have ended with, Batman and Robin, they kind of break up the friendship, and then Robin does eventually come back to help Batman, stop everything. And the script ends with Bruce entering the Batcave and bats swarming around him, and the credits roll.
Sound
which,
familiar?
You know, yeah, that was in Batman Begins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the writer, Protosevich, says that he's not saying that Batman Begins took that from his script, but he does say it was a very powerful image.
Right.
And it is. It's a cool
yeah, he
image.
Just basically
cool
said as someone as was going to get that at some point.
Yeah, they were. Apparently, they did sit down and talk with what's her name, Courtney Love, about playing Harley Quinn, but wasn't really a big
yeah.
So anyway,
yeah, that one hurt a little bit. That one hurt a little bit to find out.
Yeah. So at the same time, Warner Brothers, a lot of this happens at the same time, Warner Brothers is looking at different ideas for where they're going to go with mm-hmm. the Batman franchise after the failure of Batman and Robin. They get in contact with Lee Shapiro and Stephen Wise, a couple of writers, and they tell them that, you know, we want to go off in different directions. Let's see what we can do with this. And that's how we get Batman Dark Knight, Darknight, basically, which is basically Dar Knight.
Right.
Such a dumb title.
It's just an overuse of the squeezing two words together phenomenon.
Yeah, like, though this will make us look clever. No, it won't. It would have starred George Clooney and Chris O'Donnell, and the villains would have been, once again, the Scarecrow and Man-Bat. Now, that was pretty... This is pretty interesting. Shapiro is... He says, our script was just a direct answer to the last movie, that being Batman and Robin. Mm-hmm. Everything we were doing was, what did they do? Let's not do that.
So far, so good, Lee. Keep it going.
It begins with a retired recluse of a Bruce
you've
Wayne.
You've already lost me.
Some tragedy happened. It made him retire. Dick Grayson is off at college, and he's being all Nightwingy. But he has a professor.
He's got a very specific professor again, and we're back. Mm-hmm. I don't know who, again, there was another little tiny demon roaming around demanding that everyone cast Scarecrow. Now, him, I get behind.
Well, I mean,
Scarecrow is one of my favorite of the rogues. And
at this point, if you've already done the Joker, you've done the Penguin, you've done Catwoman, you've done Riddler, Two-Face, Mr. Freeze, and Poison Ivy, who the hell else do you have left? Scarecrow. Well,
Clayface, if you have the budget for him.
And which you don't. Right. CGI wasn't up there. It wasn't that good.
Right. I mean, and then you can pull in Raish and all that stuff. But anyway, I would have gone with Scarecrow, too. I'm down.
Sure.
And this one would have been really cool. They wanted to make him a living Scarecrow, they said. Mm-hmm. So he's suffering from, it's a disease that makes him impervious to paint. So he's got analgesia. But he's, which that's the cool touch for me. If that I haven't actually seen that used anywhere. That would be a really neat take on it. Is he can't feel pain. And I assume that translates to how he can't feel fear. Like, that's one of my... When people do him right, that's part of what they're using. The Scarecrow is not supposed to be able to fear anymore. That's why he's so fascinated by it. That's why he loves inflicting it on people. He loves watching it. But at this point in his life, he's become so immune to it. And that's what I'm hoping they're leading with Gotham, by the way.
That one kid
got an overdose, and now, hey. But the one part I didn't understand is, and this is their quote, his sense of touch is off, so it's heightened his other senses, and it made him like a living Scarecrow. I don't know any Scarecrows that are particularly aware. So I don't know what they were going for with that exactly.
Yeah, I don't know what that was supposed to be.
Please feel free to interpret that sentence for me, because I kind of read it, and I've read it five times, and just it became a jumble of words that made no sense. Now they were going to actually scar his face with Man-Bat and let him like stitch himself up and cauterize the wounds. So he was actually going to have he was going to look like the fucking Scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. But
I kind of like that he was experimenting on people, that he went to experiment on Dick Grayson because Dick Grayson was being a dick to him in class and being like, oh, you're not right about these things that you're saying in front of people. So
he does what every professor wishes he could do to smartasses.
Gets him thrown into Arkham Asylum to experiment on him. He's already experimented on Dr. Kirk Langstrom, one of his contemporaries there at the college, mm-hmm. and has turned him into Man-Bat. And they wanted this to be a trilogy. This was going to be the first of a trilogy. in the third act, apparently, Crane releases all the inmates from Arkham Asylum. One of the doctors is Harleen Quinzel, who winds up in a coma and would have come out of the coma in the sequel and been Harley Quinn. Apparently Dick is still Robin in this movie, because by the third movie, he would not be in the second movie, but he would be in the third movie as Nightwing.
Right.
And would come to help Batman fight Killer Croc and Clayface. So apparently they were planning on Clayface.
I don't think Batman needs help with Killer Croc and Clayface.
Yeah, right.
Find somebody else. Find somebody bigger. This is where you need a Raish.
Now, you know, Warner Brothers eventually passed on that deal. Apparently they did.
And another Scarecrow was lost.
Yeah. Schumacher was still trying to get in on the whole bit. He was still trying he was still connected to the franchise. He was still over here trying his best to get them interested in something that he had to say. And one of his pitches was The Dark Knight Returns. Because I believe this, that if you've looked at the number 23, you've looked at Enemy of the State, if you've looked at The Lost Boys, or there's so many movies you could look at of Joel Schumacher's falling down and go, you know what, he could have done a really good Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And for all intents and purposes, Batman Forever had a lot of great Batman elements in it. Like, there are times where they almost got it right.
Mm-hmm.
So Schumacher is a Batman fan. He stated this over and over again. So of course he loved Frank Miller's take.
Now it's more defensive than anything. He's
right.
crying out over the rallies of "I hate those nipples" that he does love Batman.
He does love Batman. So Schumacher's The Dark Knight Returns, another another project that didn't ever really take off the ground, get off the ground. And I gotta say, I like his choices for Batman. He wanted to get Michael Keaton in some old makeup, or he wanted to get Clint Eastwood to play old Bruce Wayne.
That's right, guys. Dirty Harry was almost fucking Batman.
Right, and who better to play the Dark Knight Batman than Clint Eastwood?
I can't think of anybody. I mean, John Wayne's already dead, so.
I want a Batman versus Superman where Clint Eastwood is Batman and John Wayne is Superman. That's what I want.
No.
So when they said no to that, Schumacher tried to do a Batman Year One, but they just kind of ignored him and shuffled him off into the darkness, into the neon highlighted darkness.
And you know, I blamed him. I blamed him fully until we started looking into this. And at this point now, I feel like he completely got shafted.
Yeah, I mean,
he wanted to make a good movie, and they kept sending him these terrible, terrible notes. And he had to make the movie they paid him to make at the end of the day, because that is how this shit works. So
yeah, I mean, like I said, it wasn't even notes. It was like, here are the action figures, build it around it. Like, right. They've said that, like, they base their costume designs on the action figures.
Right. Which is, you get what you put into it. If you put into a bunch of toys, you come out with a bunch of cartoon terrible figures.
There's actually...
And they attached his name to it and made it like Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin, or Batman and Forever and everything.
Right.
And yeah, when it all failed, they went, well, it was his fault. No, he's sitting here trying to pitch a good idea. And he's going deep track, too. At this point, he's getting desperate. Mm-hmm. Going, look, Dark Knight Returns, Year One, we can do these. No, it's...
And, you know, there are anecdotes on the special features for Batman and Robin where there's a particularly damning anecdote where someone says that Schumacher would walk around and say, remember, everyone, we're making a cartoon. But within the context of Schumacher's complaints, it almost sounds like he was saying it sarcastically.
Yeah, I'm starting to kind of believe that. That he was really going, remember, everyone, we're making a cartoon. You know?
Yeah.
Like, he really had just finished reading the memos sent down from the previous day's dailies and just gawked at them and thought, what the fuck am I doing with my life? They're going to make me ruin Batman. Do you know how hard it is to ruin Batman? But they're going to make me do it. It's a story. All right,
so yeah. It's about this point that Warner Brothers finally just laid down the gauntlet. Not all of those things were coming about at the same time.
Right.
Roughly the same time. And then Warner Brothers throws down the gauntlet and says, we want to reboot. We don't want to continue this Keaton through Clooney thread.
Mm-hmm.
And they grab Frank Miller.
Apparently they at least listened to Schumacher's notes on which books they should go pick up.
Yeah, well, if you have half a brain, you're already kind of thinking that way anyway.
I'm not willing to trust that they have half a brain.
Yeah, well,
I think that's fair.
It's probably fair.
I mean, I'm not going to implicitly trust that these people were using both sides of their brain. I'm just not going to do that.
It does. It seems like some executive somewhere pointed at a lower tier of executives and said, go to a comic book shop. And they all went, and they're like, I know. I know. It's scary, but go down there and ask the fat man behind the counter who's eating a cheeseburger what the best Batman stories are. And to be clear, don't put on a suit. We want you to go put on, a skeezy pair of shorts and maybe a worn Power Rangers t-shirt. And go down to the comic shop and ask this guy what he thinks.
Go through costume design downstairs and see what they have.
Right.
See if they have what they have in the area of kind of a, stoner San Diego slacker. Go pull that outfit together.
See if they have a shirt that has both chili and semen stains on it.
Right.
Go down to the comic book shop.
Ask the large, well-informed man.
Right.
What you should be looking into.
And they did. They went and they bought all of the comics.
Hopefully he warned them. Now that man will mock you heavily. He will sneer at you.
Yeah.
because those poor people came back with their tails between their legs, I guarantee it.
I think he's smarter than us. Don't worry about it. He absolutely is. He absolutely is smarter than you.
Look, he can read.
Don't worry about it. Oh, man.
But somehow, a copy of Year One made it into circulation at WB.
It did. And you know, they grab up Frank Miller.
Translated into peer picture form.
This is where we get the Darren Aronofsky Batman Year One. Darren Aronofsky, obviously the Fountain, Requiem for a Dream,
mm-hmm.
teams up with Frank Miller,
and which sounds like a dream team, right?
It sounds like a Requiem for a Dream team,
right?
Oh God!
Oh, I'll hit you later.
I'll probably hit myself.
There have to be punishments in life, Dave.
I know.
Action.
So Frank Miller says of Darren Aronofsky, he had really specific ideas about the character and which way to take it. I was surprised at the time because I tend to be the more radical of any team I'm on, but it was Darren who was much more radical than I was. I said, Darren, would you be willing to be faithful to the comics? And he was ready to rip the eyes out of them. We just had a wonderful time bashing around the story every which way and developing these characters. Mm-hmm. Now, in the script, Bruce rejects his inheritance and won't claim it until he can prove to himself that he can support himself.
Elements of that have shown up in the New 52 stuff with Scott Snyder. Elements of it.
I don't know.
Yeah. Think about Court of Owls. Look at some of the... Zero Year, I mean.
Yeah, Zero Year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he lives on the streets of Gotham as a bum. He works as a short order cook.
And the train is derailed. Go ahead.
Yeah.
That's my point.
That's kind of really weird.
I did not come to watch Batman Year One and watch Batman flip a fucking burger.
Right. And how does that doing that ever actually lead to him proving to himself that he could be Batman? Whatever.
I don't know.
So he takes
the fortune. Does he have like one good night on the actual grill where he owned it? He fucking owned those orders. He's thinking to himself, yeah. I just took care of a bus full of 37 people in under 30 minutes. I can be the
right.
Batman now.
Right. But right.
That's not the high pressure training you need.
He got to the point where he could like flip the burger with the spatula off the grill and onto the bun behind him, and he goes, all right, I'm ready.
I'm ready. Right.
So anyway, also in the story going on,
he can prep
Gordon,
the fuck out of some vegetables, though. I'll bet that.
Gordon has an affair with his wife, or on his wife, and then he's trying to deal with his wife and his new baby, and Batman winds up saving the baby, and Gordon has been tasked with taking down Batman, but he saved his baby, so they form a secret alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Miller says it was going to be very violent and R-rated.
And bold.
And, yes, and bold, and that's not going to happen, because he actually does. He tells a little story about how like they turned it in and they actually shrieked in horror.
there's one executive, one somewhere that just throws the script back in his face and gives him the "Won't someone think of the children?" and runs screaming from the room and through an office window to a 20-foot plumber.
Right, right. Oh man. So by this time we're getting Boaz Yalkin's Batman Beyond. And now this
great
is
name,
important.
By the way. Every time I see it, I think, fucking great name, dude.
Now, this is Paul Dini.
You were meant for something.
Paul Dini wanted to do a live action Batman Beyond.
I don't
he
know what he'd be like
for
live action.
I know.
I'm curious.
But he wanted to do one. And they've just spoken about it. And it looks like it didn't really get off the ground. They were basically writing the thing, and they couldn't. Apparently the first draft failed to excite them. And if Paul Dini's not excited about writing a thing, I don't want him writing a thing.
Right. No, this man, when Dini's writing and when he's really enjoying what he's writing, he literally cries. Mm-hmm. Like he'll come out of his little office or whatever he works in at home. If he comes out weeping, his wife apparently knows that he's been doing some good work that night.
Right.
He will. We're talking about trying to finish a line through tears. The man loves his material. I don't know. I agree. If he couldn't get it up, then it just wasn't happening.
Yeah, and even Yalkin
said
that
it didn't have quite the fantastic futuristic edge, which also would have been a mistake. Because I admit, one of the fun parts about Beyond was they committed completely to the premise that things are new, which was really hard to do with that kind of slightly anomalous time period that BTAS started in.
And Yalkin said that he realized he was excited at first, but he realized that it wasn't something he felt comfortable pursuing. Something mm-hmm. wasn't really right with it. So, damn it, I have to have respect for people who are willing to just go, this just isn't working. Let's not do this.
Yeah.
let's not subject people to this.
There are people we can trust somewhat implicitly on that, like Paul Dini or, as a for instance, and to move on, Joss Whedon.
Indeed. Joss Whedon, the man with the golden touch recently.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers Age of Ultron. This is the man who did Buffy and Serenity.
Mm-hmm.
Don't
forget Firefly.
And Firefly, yeah.
Of course.
This is a man who got a crack at writing a Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's already living the dream.
So he writes this thing, and he describes it as such. My heart was on the table. I was so into it. And I could tell the executive I was talking to was just completely thinking about their schedule and their window, and it was like I was talking to a wall. It was a different language, and I drove away from the meeting, and I actually said to myself, like, how much more indication do I need that the machine doesn't care? I got back to work, and they canceled Firefly. And I was like, it was rhetorical. I wasn't asking for more.
That is a truly bad day.
It is.
You go to talk to someone, you can't get them excited about a Batman script, which is, there's so much money in it, and it's such a fun character. How can someone not, like, pull themselves away from doing a little bit of mental logistics for just 10 damn minutes? And you get back and Firefly's canceled. Mid-season, after they were already, you know, failing to get out the episodes they wanted anyway. Bad day. But he pointed out something on his version of the story that he wanted to do that I would love. And he says he's this tiny 12-year-old who's about to get this shit kicked out of him, and then it cuts to Wayne Manor, and Alfred is running like something terrible has happened. He finds Bruce, and he's back from the fight, and he's completely fine. And Bruce is like, I stopped them. I can stop them. Okay. I would have given anything for Whedon's take on that line. A 12-year-old who realizes he can actually do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
as for Whedon's villain,
that's $10 that I wish I would have had the luxury of spending.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Whedon has also said, in his version, there is actually a new villain. It wasn't one of the classics, which is mm-hmm. probably why they didn't use his script.
Mm-hmm.
He says it was more of a Hannibal Lecter type. He was already somebody in Arkham Asylum that Bruce went and studied with.
Yep.
He says, it was a whole thing. I get very emotional about it. I still love the story. Maybe I'll get to do it as a comic one day.
Maybe.
I will be there to buy that comic, Mr. Whedon. I will be there to buy that comic, DC.
It's almost like he gets a little bit fed up with the whole being on set thing for a minute and decides he just wants to chill at home for a few months. And it seems like that's when we tend to get, you know, hey, I'm going to go take over Marvel Ultimate for a second, or hey, I'm going to do this.
Right.
And I think it's one of those universally accepted things that if he touches pen to paper for a comic book, it's going to sell and it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
If he releases ink, you're in good hands.
You're not wrong. All right, already, DC fans, we're going to end part one of DC movies that never happened here. Next Monday is part two, where we discuss the Wolfgang Peterson Batman vs. Superman, George Miller's Justice League Mortal, Joss Whedon's Wonder Woman, and so much more. We'll also be dropping a mini-episode this week where we dive into our thoughts on the Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice trailer, the Suicide Squad trailer, the Vixen trailer, and some more news that dropped at Comic-Con. We are DC On Screen, and you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, and on our website, DCOnScreen.com. Please go give us some 5-star ratings and leave us a review over at iTunes and Stitcher. We may respond in a future episode if and you do. Now, if you're looking for a similar podcast for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, go check out our friends Matt Carroll and Jeff Randall at the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. They are also on iTunes and Stitcher or MCUcast.com. I'm David C. Robertson, and you can find my sketch comedies and web series at maladjusted.tv. Until next week, put some of that damn sweet DC on your screen. I know I will.